evening. I'm Corey Morgan, and welcome to The Pipeline. This is the Western Standard's weekly panel show where we go into the top issues of the week, and there's always lots of them, and analyze, break them down, take all the thinking out of it so you don't have to, or at least give our thoughts on those things. I'm joined today, I'll start on the end here, with our news editor, Dave Naylor. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
It's going good, Corey. Wealth of topics to talk about today, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, glad we could pull you out of the wink an hour long enough to address those.
Best wings in the city.
Yes,
hi to Angela, if she's listening.
That's what I've been hearing, is they're good down there. One of the commenters said that following after the show, too. And our opinion editor, Nigel Hannaford.
Good to be here again, Corey. I heard you ranting this morning, and I thought, got to get in there, well, join him.
Yeah, there's always lots to rant about. Isn't I like there? To think there's a productive end to it. You got to get it out, and then we work on the solution part. All right. Well, before we get on to our ranting and our subjects, I should speak to our sponsor, actually, and that's how we remain independent, not only 3-year subscriptions, which we really appreciate. Of course, you've all subscribed, right? And as well as from advertisers. And the Canadian Shooting Sports Association has been a fantastic sponsor of this show and the Western Standard for a long time. If you own firearms, you're a hunter, you're a target shooter, you're a collector, it doesn't really matter. It's nobody else's business either. But you need to hang on to those, protect your rights. That's what these guys are about. The Canadian Shooting Sports Association lobbies on your behalf. They will keep you up to date on what's going on in Ottawa with a government that's trying to take away your property and your right and ability to use firearms. As well, like any other association, they offer all kinds of resources on safe firearm use or upcoming shows and events. So check them out, guys, and take out a membership with them, too. It's well worth it. Canadian Shooting Sports Association, their website, cssa-cila.org. Or just Google them. It's always the easiest way. All right, well, let's get on. We got a bunch of stuff to cover today. A good rant-worthy start. It sounds like our premier went on something of a rant, actually, Dave. The Alberta premier, Ms. Smith's gone after Mr. Gilboa again.
Yeah, like shooting ducks in a barrel, I think, here. But it's, you remember that meme? I think it's Michael Jackson sitting in there, and he's just munching popcorn, getting excited for the show. That's what I'm like with these two. I mean, they're just at each other's throats. Started out with the week with Stephen Gilboa calling Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe immoral for not collecting the carbon tax. So we, of course, ran a picture of Mr. Gilboa in his prison outfit. This is him, I think, after he climbed the CN Tower and caused all sorts of chaos there. And he also climbed onto the roof of Ralph Klein's house while his wife Colleen was there by herself, scaring the hell out of her. So if anybody's calling anybody immoral, you better make sure that you've got a clean record yourself. Fast forward to the next day, Premier Smith puts out a statement saying that Alberta strongly stands with Premier Scott Moe in his fight with the government. But later on, at a speech to the Calgary Rotary Club, where our Scott Pulser was the only media in attendance, believe it or not, she came right out and called Gilboa a lunatic. So, I mean, the war of words between these two and Scott Moe now, I guess, is really quite incredible to see. You don't normally see this kind of discourse on a federal provincial level. Smith has called for him to be removed from cabinet. We're not working with him anymore, Smith says. Meanwhile, Justin Trudeau does nothing.
Yeah. Did she actually say that he was a lunatic or had lunatic ideas?
Lunatic policies, lunatic, I think, was yeah. To me, that he's a lunatic.
Thing,
yeah.
Just as a matter
if you
of,
could, if you contrive policies that are lunatic, you're a lunatic.
Oh, yes, you would be, wouldn't you? Yeah. Like if you wrote crazy editorials, you'd be crazy.
Well, and Gilboa really represents, though, the ideological wing of the Liberal Party. I mean, the corner, the eco-extreme. I mean, I think it was telling, though, that he uses the term immoral. That shows in his mind this isn't a matter of policy or, technically what's better or worse for the country. It's a morality thing, and it's almost a religious-like thing, which should be called out.
I think the whole climate change thing has been religious from the beginning, with a clear definition of what is morally right and what is morally wrong. And people like David Suzuki and, I guess, Mr. Gilboa himself now as prophets of the... I mean, I don't know who the Messiah is in this story, but at any rate, there are very...
I thought people, it was Greta Thunberg.
Well, no, there's room for a female prophetess as well.
Oh, okay.
So, it's kind of... It's all part of the great story, So I don't know where that ends, but with regards to the... I would have to think that Mr. Gilboa does what he does with full blessing and approval of the Prime Minister. Because it's been going on for a while now. Whether it was preemptively putting out provocative policy statements as he did at COP28 a few months ago, blindsiding the government of Alberta completely, or some of the other remarks that he has made, it's got to the point where I would expect that a normally functioning government would say, you know, you need to tone it down, keep it down. There may even be a cabinet shuffle in this for you, with you on the way out. That has not happened. It has not even been hinted at. So
even with their poll numbers, which we're going to get to later.
Which we're going to get to, they still haven't done it. So I'm wondering what the purpose behind allowing him to continue like this is. Because it is past the point in which you can say, well, he's just a junior minister. No, he's not. Well, he's just shooting his mouth off. Everybody makes mistakes. Yeah, one a week is a bit much. So there clearly is something at the end of this. And I know I don't want to be bored on the subject, but I know on previous pipeline shows, I've suggested it is part of two things, really. One is that everything gets heaped on Mr. Gilbeau. So if this finally looks like a loser, dump him. And Mr. Trudeau says, well, you know, we did the best we could with him, you know. But more to the point, I think that the more that Alberta, Saskatchewan stick up for each other and for themselves, they're giving Mr. Trudeau the narrative that we've got problems out in the West and I need you boys to rally around me, boys and girls. That's not to say that Smith and Moe are doing anything other than what they should be doing by asserting their constitutional position, but it is a cynical play in Ottawa that actually allows Mr. Gilbeau to do lunatic things.
Well, and don't forget, one of his lunatic things just last week was, I'm not going to build any more roads in Canada. Yeah. You know, I mean, that, you know, and again, that just, you know, kind of backtracked a little bit the next day.
But he walked that back
on an unpaved stretch of gravel. but, you know, he just doesn't stop. It's just week after week after week, it's the same. And it's just, mm-hmm. you know, like I said, you could just set your watch by it.
As Nigel said, though, perhaps it is a bit tactical. I mean, the thing that is striking out of Trudeau with this is his silence. He's not applauding or condemning Gilbeau. He just kind of winds him up and lets him go. But if it's providing him that distraction and that foil, because, I mean, the federal government's well served to have a fight with the West. But it doesn't necessarily look good if the prime minister is picking it. Mm-hmm. If you can have this guy keep the hornet's nest all worked up and perhaps, I mean, again, it doesn't seem to be working. We'll get on to that. But there might be, a strategic underlying rationale to that.
Well, it looks that way to me. Now, what then is the appropriate response from the Alberta and Saskatchewan and Manitoba? I would like to say BC, but I don't see any sign of it. What would be the appropriate response? I don't know. I think you've got to stand your ground.
And don't forget, the Liberals have also been losing in court. You know, that they've lost two constitutional challenges now in recent weeks. So, you know, it's not just Moe and Smith standing up to them. It's the courts of the land are saying what you're doing is illegal.
It's not only illegal, but it's highly cynical, doesn't even begin to describe it. First, you put out your law. These people have all the information they need from the Privy Council legal. They know when they put these bills out there that they are unconstitutional. But they put it out there, vote it into power, act upon the powers that they have now illegally taken unto themselves, destroy trust, crucify investment, and then when somebody says it's actually illegal, I say, oh, well, you know, I guess we'll appeal that. Meanwhile, the damage is done. This is the bully tactics that this government is using, and it continues.
I mean, the single-use plastic ban was shot down, but it's still in place. I still have to get one of those rotten paper straws if I go to a fast food outlet, or carry some filthy reusable bag if I want to get my groceries. So when and how does the court ever actually get to the point of telling a government, you can't do this anymore?
Well, they have. and the liberals will appeal.
Or how can they enforce it? Yeah, so we, you know, so we still have to leave it in place until still, the appeal is done.
Yeah, so you've still got the appeal to the Supreme Court, and they'll change it, and it'll still be illegal, I would think. And eventually the Supreme Court will say, no, this is unconstitutional, and by then they'll be hopefully out of office.
Well, and that's getting on to the next subject. Yeah, I mean, as agonizing as it might be, and technically it could be as long as almost 3 years, if they want to repeal their own fixed election date law, that they could cling to power in there. Eventually, the liberals are going to have to face an election. And Dave, it's not looking very good.
No, it's 20-point lead now for the conservatives under Pierre Poilievre, 43% to 23%. Liberals now, you know, barely ahead of the NDP, which I think if the NDP surpasses them, Jagmeet may want to question why he's staying in a coalition with them. Seat totals, again, massive landslide victories for the Tories. And the Liberals losing is, you know, the last one I saw was they were only 4 seats ahead of the NDP in the seat polling. So it's, you know, if an election was held today, obviously it would be a crushing defeat. But it's not, as you said, it could be a while away. And I was reading a column today by CTV commentator Don Martin, who I remember here from his days at the Calgary Herald. He brought up an interesting point. Are the Tories peaking too soon? You know, they keep getting these gifts handed to them of Trudeau scandals, but, you know, are they too soon? Should they be peaking closer to the election? I don't know when you can choose to peak or not.
I'm not sure that you can. I mean, the scandals have the effect that they do. People just throw their hands up and walk away. And if that's to the advantage of the conservatives, I guess you can't say no thanks, can you? It would be nice if this was like 2 weeks before the election instead of 20 months away, but they'll peak when they peak. But right now, what the interesting thing that I see in this is that, I mean, theoretically, if you add the NDP vote and the Liberal vote together, you get a couple of percent more than the Conservatives had. So could the thing roll along a little longer? No, because then I think we get the issue of vote efficiency coming in. Just looking at the projections here, we're always going to get those massive majorities in Alberta and Saskatchewan, but right now they're showing the Conservatives taking 85 seats in Ontario. What have we got there at the moment? What have they got? 25, something like that. So but they're going to hold those seats by 100 votes here and 500 votes there and 1,700 votes there. It's going to be a lot of narrowly held seats that actually make the difference. And it's actually always this way. In 2011, in that famous election which gave Harper the strong, stable National Conservative majority, it was actually a majority of 16. And if you add it up, the 16 conservatively held seats, which had the smallest majorities, I don't think he made 10,000. So it can be that narrow. But at the moment, it's looking like it would go that way.
So, I mean, that can be one scandal away from a turnaround in an election. I mean, yeah, you certainly can't take it to the bank yet.
No. And you've got the mainstream media attacking Poilievre on a daily basis. So
they love holding the opposition to it.
You've hidden the map for me, Nigel.
Sorry.
But you know, I find the BC thing interesting. The Liberals are almost going to be wiped out in BC, including Vancouver, where there's some very strong conservative voting at the moment, and the Maritimes seem to be strong for the conservatives. So it's, you know, it's only Quebec that they're not leading in.
But Quebec, I mean, there's another factor. Canada's got such a crazed, the American electoral system's crazier than ours, I still contend. But, I mean, you look at the amount of balls that come into play. You think of the last really large conservative majorities, and those were under Prime Minister Brian Mulroney. But he had a lot of seats in Quebec. And we're not seeing really big gains in Quebec, but something that came around since Mulroney's time was the Bloc, which came from Mulroney. But that's eating Liberal seats as well. So, I mean, they're another, because the PQ is on the rise right now. know, secessionism's on the rise in Quebec for the first time, more than we've seen since the late 90s. We got a lot going on in our electoral stew right now. It's not boding well for Trudeau at this point. But
no, and you know, again, it goes back to what we were just talking about with Gil Bo. No matter what they do, seems to implode on them, and they don't seem to be showing any sort of desire to divert from the course that they're on. That is obviously not resonating with voters.
One of the things that has happened to the Liberal Party is that they were never particularly competent in the first place. But they have now got such a reputation for incompetence that it's almost as if they could never do anything right anyway. We're going to be talking about the cover-up of the Winnipeg lab scandal there. But then there's also the fact that, again, the Department of Finance, the deficit is 16% higher than it was expected to be. There was a time when stories like that would have caught everybody's attention. They don't now, really. It's just expected. And people, if you challenge somebody, you're always in the bar. Try us.
I'm not always in the bar. I'm just doing chicken wing nights. They have good wings.
So, but here's the thing. Do you think the Liberals are competent? No, they couldn't run a party in a brewery. Name me three things that they've done wrong. People think about it and they get the first one and the second one and scratch for the third. There's actually about 50 things they could choose from over the past 8 years. People read it and then they forget the details, but they don't forget that there was something. And so the last couple of bad examples just get piled in on the other 50 that went before that they don't remember. The Liberals have built themselves a reputation for incompetence. And that, as much as anything, is what's going to bring them down.
Well, and hopefully that's what the Tories, with their massive election war chest, will be pointing out in advertising. Hey, you know, you may have forgotten this 2 years ago, but this is what they did, and this.
And they just aren't getting a break with any good news. They're not getting anything to counter it. They're not getting anything to pop up and say, hey, look, our policy reduced crime over here, or our policy made housing more available over there, or they don't have any successes to point at. I mean, you can be overwhelmed by failures, but at least you should have a few bright lights in there.
No, the country's in a bit of a tailspin. There's no doubt about it.
The other question, though, is how long? And they keep surprising me. I don't obviously understand the Liberal Party interior caucus culture. How long before some of these guys start jumping ship? I mean, you know, they've got to be terrified for their own seats, whether it's backbench Liberal MPs or even some cabinet ministers, realizing they're riding into electoral oblivion if they don't do something to change course pretty soon.
Well, thinking back to the Canadian Alliance days, there was a mechanism which was used, and that was that they set up an alternative caucus. You may remember.
Yes, yeah. Canadian Conservative Reform Alliance.
Something,
And
then every week, somebody would bail out of the Canadian Alliance and go and join the Rebels. And so, first of all, the Rebels got stronger. And every time they got stronger, it weakened the leader, Stoppelday at that time. But it also kept the story alive.
Slow drip.
Yeah, drip. And so in the end, it created a... Now, why doesn't that happen with the Liberal Party? Well, I think there's a couple of possible reasons. One is certainly that behind the facade of elected representatives, there is actually a party structure and some core supporters who actually have influence beyond their ability to fund anymore, who maintain some sort of discipline. I would say now is not the time. Maybe it's not something we want to do at all, but if we do, we need a credible person to be the for other people to gather around. And I'm not sure at the moment who they could put forward and say, well, Mr. Trudeau has failed us, but this person could be our champion, and we are therefore going to move over to these people.
And who takes over? Chrystia Freeland?
Well, I mean, I don't think that's going to help them.
No, it won't help them. They don't have anybody a superstar waiting in the wings.
There's no immediate heir apparent sitting
there. No, and I think Mark Carney is smart enough to say, hey, I want nothing to do with this at the moment.
That's
right. Because I could become a leader and then 2 months later, forced to resign when I get wiped out.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the model right there. Brilliant man. Very likable. Not effective as an opposition leader. So they're kind of stuck with him at the moment.
So I just hope it's stressing some of them as much as it stresses me then, because they're keeping him in there and it's getting exhausting. Yeah.
They are behaving as though they know they're going to lose. They'll hang on as long as they can. And in the meantime, they're just going to throw everything that they can at the things they don't like, which is the West, the energy industry.
And that's troubling. I mean, that's one of the problems I've had with, say, term limits. Term limits, there's a good and bad to them. I mean, you know, leaders wear out their welcome. That happens all the time. This stops that from happening. But as well, of course, a leader with a term limit will always turn lame duck. That final year, they don't care what happens any longer. They're just going to get done what they feel needs to be done, whether right or wrong.
Let the record show that when this matter was broached, I think it's the Western Standard, which is the first to float the possibility that the fixed election date could be repealed. It would be tremendously cynical and recognized as such, but if they know they're going to lose anyway, that might be the better option.
It's just legislation. Give them an extra year.
Yes, it could happen.
We haven't even started with the patronage appointments yet, have we? I mean, we've got all that to come. Oh. So, I mean, you know what? It's as a news editor, it keeps me busy. And holy cow, we're there.
As a news editor, I'm eligible.
Well, you know, I suppose I could be. Paula Simon's got appointed to the Senate.
I was going to say, Senator Naylor.
Yeah, there you go. But no shortage of stories for us to write. And holy cow.
But I mean, that's what sinks the next leader as well. I mean, if we're going to play, you know, the historical caps on the geeks, that's kind of what destroyed Turner.
Yeah, you had a choice.
You can say no to all of his friends before he headed out the door, and then, okay, John, you can take care of the fallout.
Yeah.
And he certainly wore it. Because, again, he was another bright, likable guy, but he was holding onto a party that just didn't have a chance. Oh. Well, speaking of more bad news for Trudeau then, I mean, getting back to his policy, I mean, part of his issues, one of Trudeau's weakest points, is just his weakness itself. I mean, on divisive issues, he likes to try and straddle it. You know, he's wishy-washy. He panders to both sides. And this whole Israel-Hamas conflict is going for a long time. And now, you know, it's not gaining him any love on either side. And we saw Dave just the other night. He tried to hold a gathering with the Italian prime minister, and it didn't go well.
It didn't go well at all. It was a national embarrassment. Keep in mind, at a recent, I think it was a G7 meeting, the relationship between Canada and Italy wasn't very good because Trudeau tried to lecture them on gender issues, and the female prime minister of Italy told him to get lost. So when Maloney came to
Maloney
came to Canada on a state visit, I think Trudeau realized it was important, and it was important to show her well, and it went terribly. There was a largest crowd, 200 people or so, pro-Palestinian supporters, pro-Hamas supporters, trying to block the entranceway to a major event that was going to be happening with Trudeau and Maloney. And Trudeau's security made the decision to cancel it. A black eye, a major embarrassment. You know, we're not talking about hosting a visit from the Prime Minister of Kazakhstan or something like that. This is from a G7 trading partner, and our stock on the world is already low enough without something like this. We're not invited to military stuff. We're not invited to the secret stuff between the U.S. and Australia now and Great Britain. Just another black eye. You know, we cannot move 200 people out of the way to get a prime minister and a foreign dignitary in. A true disgrace.
According to the reports, the day following, the Ontario police were ready to do the job. It was the prime minister's office itself that said, let's not bother. So, you know, we actually do have we do have the capability to handle these things. And I recall how they were handled in 2010 when there was a G20 meeting in Toronto, and there was a lot of protest then, but it got done. This was, I think it was maybe a little more than 200 people, but when you looked at the pictures that were taken there outside the museum at the Ontario Art Gallery, there was a very heavy police presence. They had the horses out there. They had the guys with the riot shields. They could have done that. I am now trying to put myself in Mr. Trudeau's head to imagine what his thought process might have been.
Painful endeavor
and possibly incorrect, but I have a feeling that he didn't want the images of pro-Palestine people being shoved, pushed, moved out of the way. They actually did close that building down for a while. There was a point when the guests were inside and couldn't get out, and other guests were outside and couldn't get in. I mean, it's ridiculous because there's always a back way into these places. They don't usually come through the front door unless there's a reason to. They go in through the back entrance, walk through a lot of kitchens in 6 years with Prime Minister Harper. That's how they typically bring secure people into the hold, and then they emerge on the stage when they're supposed to. And it's not because of hostile crowds, it's because they just don't want press calling out questions to them as they walk in. So that thing could easily have been done, but they chose not to do it and handed the other side a little card that says, "We are weak, try again next week." And sure enough, we've now got, I believe, a suit against the federal government from a Palestinian group that includes somebody who's here as a refugee claimant. I don't understand how a refugee claimant gets to sue the government of the country that he's claiming refuge in, but that is where we have landed.
No kidding. Well, anybody can sue anybody, but it's been going on too long now since October 7th. We've had these pro-Palestinian demonstrations, disrupted shopping malls, infrastructure across the country. So it just wasn't this one night of with the Italian government. It's been going on daily since October 7th. And the police across this country have done nothing. Nothing. You know, they had no problem trampling trucker supporters with police horses. You know, they had no problem moving those people back and out. Why can't they do the same thing with these? They're not huge crowds, right? No, if it was Joe Biden, I could see there would be thousands of people there. But it's
and
not.
And even then, they would have found a way.
Maybe.
Or
maybe.
Should have found a way.
Yeah. But that's why you set up perimeters that before these people get in there. I don't mean to sound like Don Cherry when I say these people. By the pro-Palestinian groups, put up the barriers before they get there and enforce them. You know, the police in, I was reading something today that the police officers in Toronto, they're so upset, but they've been ordered, observe.
They're emasculated.
Don't enforce. Exactly. The policing since October 7th in this country, again, an embarrassment.
But he's not getting love from these pro-Hamas people for his weakness in this. Just the other night, following that, these nutcases came out and blocked a liberal fundraiser and got physical with people. And again, the police allowed, you know, liberal guests who were supposed to go out to that to be turned away by these protesters. They're still given free rein. The government is not learning from this, and it's just emboldening the extremists more. It's not
to the point where they accosted him on a ski hill yesterday. I don't know where you ski near Ontario, probably somewhere or in Ottawa, sorry. But they're a little small group of them accosted him on a ski hill. Now, how where's the security? How can they get so close to him? I'll give them this. The pro-Palestinians they're in control of the message at the moment. They're the ones that are doing it. You're right. They control the streets.
And it's an embarrassment. I mean, diplomatically, we're weak.
Just add that to the list of incompetence by this government, because this should not be happening.
Yeah. Well, and I saw somebody with a headline. I was trying to find it. It might be the Post. I'll probably miscredit it, but it was a columnist who said Canada's becoming a minnow on the world scene, like a diplomatic minnow, you know, it's true, and we're not respected. And when we have a visiting world leader, the least you can expect diplomatically, even if you don't like the leader, whatever, is you keep them safe and contained when they visit. There's always going to be protesters.
Yeah, even without the war in Israel, there would have been protesters.
And as we said, this wasn't a large protest in the scheme of all things. You don't have to go in with water cannons and tear gas and truncheons. If you just put some barricades back and actually charged a few of these guys for a change, actually deport a few of them if they've committed crimes here, I suspect they'll behave themselves pretty quickly. But they've gotten a pass. So they just realize, well, we can do whatever we want.
You know, I'm just thinking, since the start of the show, how many times have we used the word embarrassment?
Yeah. What do you mean? And who wants to send their leader to this country to potentially get caught up in a morass like that? So, you know, we'll take a pass. Thanks. We're not going to visit. That's not good.
We'll catch you on the margins of the next Davos meeting. Yeah.
So when you're standing on the outside peeking in at us, showing off your socks.
No, and then certainly wouldn't have helped the personal relationship between Trudeau and Maloney, which was already on the rocks to begin with.
So getting on to federal security for cabinet ministers, though, it sounds like if you're a reporter with the wrong group, boy, they will lay hands on you pretty darn fast. We're hearing about the incident with Freeland and David Menzies again now.
We are. A few weeks ago, he approached her with a cameraman on the street as she was walking and tried to ask a question. And he was intercepted by a burly RCMP officer and kind of manhandled in a way and was prevented from doing his job. It was obvious. I'm sure Ezra's eyes lit up at the first sight of this. And this week they filed a lawsuit, which they're so confident in. I think it's the first time Ezra hasn't actually asked people to fund, to pay for the lawyers to fund the lawsuit. So, I mean, holy cow, it's going to be...
How much are they going for, Dave?
I don't think it said, but...
I thought it was $1 million.
Was it $1 million?
Yeah.
Either way, it's ka-ching. Of course, it'll be taxpayers' money that covers it. But it was an outrageous abuse of power. No matter what you think about Menzies, he was trying to do a job of a journalist, and he was prevented from doing it, and it's going to cost government lots of money.
Well, you know, they disqualified Rebel News from participation in the same bailout scheme that the mainstream media gets and that we qualify for but don't receive. Rebel News didn't even qualify. So if they get any money out of this, good luck to them.
Well, that's one way to get subsidized, I guess. I mean, I don't begrudge security around senior ministers and the prime minister. I mean, it's important that they aren't intimidated when they're going about. But, I mean, it's a matter of judgment, you know. I mean, you can kind of, we've seen it, you know. You can gently move people away from the minister or discourage them. And I mean, they knew who Menzies was. Let's not pretend that they thought he was a random nutcase coming out of the woodworks to assail the minister. The only thing he was going to assail her with was questions, and his worst weapon is usually bad taste.
Yeah, and he had a cameraman follow. So the Mountie obviously knew what he was doing, and should be reprimanded for it.
Well, it probably has been, but now comes the court case.
Now comes the court case. Hopefully Ezra invites us to the celebratory party.
Well, if when it's the celebratory, check
when
we
the
know
check
we're
arrives,
hear about it.
When the check arrives.
Rebel is not a quiet organization when it comes to their victories. And to their credit, I mean, when it came to Guilbeault, with blocking reporters on Twitter, they actually got a court ruling and won against Minister Guilbeault because Guilbeault had blocked Rebel.
And the Canadian taxpayers paid that legal morass off.
Which, ironically, I don't even necessarily agree with. I think politicians should have the right to block people on Twitter, but the courts feel otherwise. Like this government's arrogance just keeps... I guess part of the problem is it doesn't bite them on the butt. It bites us as taxpayers. They don't feel that...
And in the days after that, you had certainly had a lot of politicians unblocking reporters across the country.
Jody Gondek even unblocked me.
Wow.
Yeah, she still hasn't said anything, but she unblocked me.
Time to test is, will you get an Easter card?
I'm not
Which, if you think about it, would be quite an exceptional circumstance.
Go or Passover.
Yeah.
Because, Jody hasn't shown much love for the Jewish community in Calgary. She wants to make some amends. I won't hold my breath.
No.
But it's interesting to watch anyways. I mean, that's part of the thing with Rebel, though. They are kind of, they're media, but they're activists. They like to
Sure.
But sometimes they're making positive change. Give credit where it's due.
Yep.
You know. Getting, I guess, more serious, the lab investigation, the Winnipeg, the Chinese interference. Speaking of federal government weak spots, boy, that weak spot when it comes to the Communist Party of China is something else. And this story, again, as Nigel was talking, this should be hitting much bigger headline news. This should be a massive scandal. We're not hearing a lot.
No, we're absolutely not hearing anything. And I'm going to use that word embarrassment again. What we know is there is a high-secure biolab, Canada's most important biolab in Winnipeg. Fact. We know a Chinese couple worked there and had high-security clearance. Turns out they were spies. They were spying for the Chinese Communist Party and probably passing on secrets. And the woman also was involved in the lab in Wuhan. And I'll let your conspiracy theories go wild there. This is a major scandal, Corey. Questions need to be asked. How did this happen? What was the security? What was the vetting? What secrets did they lose? What did China gain out of this? Conservatives, quite rightly, wanted to hold hearings, parliamentary hearings into this. And not surprisingly, the NDP and the Liberals said no. So right now, it's all buried under, and this is a government that went to try and keep the court papers in this case secret. So we know there's something there. We know that it's something very, very damaging to the government and to the security of this country. And the Liberals are doing their best to cover it up. And it's a scandal.
It absolutely is. I mean, they transferred dangerous pathogens and intellectual property that had been worked out in Winnipeg, sent it back to China, but actually transferring, you know, these chemicals, I don't know what else to call them, it's not my area of expertise, but something tangible left Winnipeg, ended up in Wuhan. It's quite outrageous, and I think the reason that it doesn't get more play, Dave, is that people fundamentally don't really understand what happened here.
No, but, because they don't have all the facts yet.
Well, they don't have all the facts, but the reason for that is that Mr. Trudeau has defied about four orders of Parliament to come clean. He even took the Speaker to court, you may recall, this was before Christmas,
yep,
to keep the Winnipeg lag documents out of sight. And now, here they are, with their NDP buddies, obstructing a parliamentary committee that wants to get to the bottom of it. Reduced to its simplest terms, Chinese spies took information from Canada, shipped it back to China, were caught, expelled, and now the government that's actually responsible for all of this in the, you know, at the top of the organizational chart doesn't want anybody to know any more than that. So this is a fit with electoral interference. We know there was some, but they don't want anybody to know any more than that. And they're looking into it and will never report because people
won't forget. What we need is, just like the electoral interference stuff, we need a CSIS agent slipping brown envelopes under reporters' doors.
It might come to it. I mean, it's this big, glaring blind spot with China that's been dogging them since day one. I mean, there's that video, I'll invite others to Google it. Taiwan actually made it of Trudeau during his second year in power, I believe. It was a digitized thing showing Trudeau dancing for Chinese leaders as they threw money at him and dragged tea bags on him. Either way, but it shows that...
Was he in costume?
He was in tassels. Either way...
I was joking.
But either way, it's just showing that it's been recognized that Justin Trudeau has been tight with the Chinese Communist Party government since day one, to his detriment.
They're a dictatorship he admires, quote unquote.
And it comes down to this. But then that's Trudeau. Okay, we've lowered our expectations pretty much as low as we can with him. But how weak is Jagmeet Singh willing to let himself get to cling to this. He's showing absolutely no principles as even an opposition leader to say, hey, we need to have another look at this. It was, no, we're going to circle the wagons with Justin and cover this up. I mean, he's looking pathetic in this as well.
Yeah, Trudeau must have offered him something, you would think, unless he's just, you know, he's got no moral fiber left, which may be the case.
A bit of both, I think.
A bit of both. But this is a national scandal. There are going to be investigative reporters digging through as much as they can. We will get more information. Whether we'll find out the whole story or not remains to be seen. But it's, again, I'll go back to the word embarrassment, national embarrassment.
You know, it was worth noting that when it came to the ArriveCan scandal, we had a story this morning highlighting how nervous civil servants are about assisting in any kind of investigation. And I understand that. It's they're not actually responsible. They are instruments of the organization, and an elected official is actually the responsible one. But trying to find out from somebody who works on the shop floor, so to speak, what really went on is hard, and it will be hard here because they really, that we say we have whistleblower
They're
protection
well
here.
Protected, no.
They are not well protected. I have some sympathy for them.
The accountant that was testifying for the story today says, you know, no one wants to commit career suicide. You can understand that in a way, hopefully somebody will muster some courage and.
Well, you'd have to muster a lot, Dave, because, you know, once you get on full time with the Federal Civil Service, the rewards are rich. You get pension benefits and everything else. You never need to worry about it again.
For the long game. Well, for our last few minutes to close up, maybe we'll just get a quick couple of comments out of each of you. With the Alberta budget came down. This is the first full budget since Premier Smith, you know, got fully elected as the premier. This is the rebellious type premier, conservative, unapologetic libertarian we expected or hoped or would have thought there'd be some flash or some cuts or some, but it seems to be kind of a follow the
yeah,
course.
It's kind of a blah budget. Promised tax cuts did not come, and they won't be coming for a couple of years. There was increased spending, obviously, but certainly not enough to meet the 25% wage increases that unions are demanding. Premier Smith basically said, you know, we've all got to share a bit of pain now. There was a $300 and some million projected surplus, but that's one disaster, one flood, one big forest fire away from being eliminated, and we're back into running a deficit. So there was no shocking items there, the premier's warning, okay, you know, going to have to do a little bit of belt tightening, and we're all in this together.
Which is more or less what Ralph Klein said 20 years ago. The difference was the belt actually did get tightened, and wages were frozen at a certain level for some years in teaching and in the health ministries. But it was a different kind of Albertans in those days. I mean, back in the Klein days, I think the sort of the center of gravity of opinion actually leaned towards somewhat the public good, we need to do this. I'm not sure that exists anymore, or at least not enough to make it an easy sell for the prime minister, for the premier. There was one good thing, one thing I spotted, that they have put money into the Heritage Fund. I'm a strong believer in that. I want to see more of it. The point of the Heritage Fund is it's a way of preserving resource revenues. Well, if resource revenues are down, you're not actually preserving resource revenues, are you? So it's when resource revenues are up that's really going to have to be the key consideration.
Yeah, if oil prices go in the tank, this budget is in serious trouble. If oil prices increase, then that'll obviously increase the surplus. So there is a heck of a lot riding on world oil prices in the next year.
Yeah, well, and as I guess all the way on the way up, as a, you know, when we worked together at the Wild Rose Party and she was an opposition leader, or when she was a radio host, Danielle Smith would always say, well, the way to avoid that vulnerability is to cut the spending now so you're not so dependent later. But tunes change once you get in office. It's unfortunate. This is the first year in a new term. This is usually when you want to take the tough decisions now. It's when the closer you get to the election, the less likely you're going to be to.
You know, as she said, this is our last chance. This there'll only be one more boom if we're in a boom. If oil prices go up, this is our last chance. And if we want to save some money for the future, it has to be done now or never.
Well, let's hope for the best, I guess. She's still in her first year, and I'm sure there's a lot of fireworks to go yet with Premier Smith in this first term.
Oh, it's just getting started.
Oh, yes. And, well, we'll see whenever there's a new opposition leader to see what comes there. But that's discussion for a future show. We've yes. kind of covered them all.
Quickly, Nahed Nenshi will announce one way or the other next week.
Yes.
Whether so he's running for it.
Looking forward to attacking him vigorously for that.
Has he unblocked you?
Oh, he follows me.
Oh, he follows
me. He's different from Gondek that way. He's one of those, he can't stand what I'm saying, but he's still going to see what I'm saying. All right. Well, thanks, Dave, Nigel.
Thank you. Good fun.
And all of you guys.
Good to be here.
Again, be sure to get on there, westernstandard.news/membership. Get a subscription, guys. It keeps us rolling, keeps us independent, keeps those stories coming. And we'll see you all again next week.
Canadian Shooting Sports Association. Without the CSSA, our gun rights would have been taken long, long ago. These guys are on the front lines, helping to draft smart and intelligent firearms regulations and legislation in Canada. And more importantly, educating the public about how we keep guns out of the hands of the wrong people. Become a member. It's absolutely worth every penny. You can become a Western Standard member for just $10 a month or $99 a year for unlimited access.